The title of my talk this morning is Solving Problems That Never Were. Solving Problems That Never Were. I know it doesn't really make very much sense, and I'm not even sure it's grammatical. When I gave the title to Paul, I could kind of see him wince a little bit. But a little nervous twitch. So let me give you an example of it from my own life, and after I explain the example, I think you'll understand what I'm talking about. It's been a real honor for me for a couple of years now to work on the Spring Retreat Committee. Every year we have a spring retreat. We go up into the North Georgia Mountains for a couple of days, and it's really wonderful. We get away up there. We get to go to some great seminars. We have wonderful musical talent, and it's a way to get to know people. It's one of the nicest Christmas gifts you can give yourself. So get started saving up some money, because in March we'll go back up to the North Georgia Mountains for our retreat. And like I said, for a couple of years, I've been kind of helping out on that committee. And last year, we sort of had a different situation. We were going to have to move from the place that we had been having the retreat to a new facility. We had been having the retreat at Brasstown Valley. And Brasstown Valley is in Young Harris, and it's a spectacular resort facility. When you first step out of your car underneath the portico and walking to the door of the resort, you know you're really in a special place. It's got stacked stones and these huge wooden beams and a vaulted ceiling for the portico. It's just really amazing. You know you're in a first-class facility. But there had been a couple of problems with the facility. For one thing, every year the facility was so large, we had to share it with an association of lawyers. And the lawyers thought we were aliens, so that was a little discomfort there. The staff really weren't as attentive to us as we would like. They seemed like they did a little bit more for the lawyers than they did for us, and so that was a little issue. And the third issue that really kind of made us realize that we had to go looking for something new was they kept raising the prices. And eventually got to a point we realized that we weren't going to be able to pay that and bring in the outside talent we were really interested in bringing in. So we began our search. We looked all over, high and low, for a new facility. Nothing really came close to offering all the nice things that Brasstown Valley did. And finally, somebody recommended a resort to us in Hiawassee, the Ridges. And the retreat committee went up to the Ridges to look it over, and the first thing we realized that the staff was just delightful. They couldn't help us enough, so that was really good. The individual rooms were actually decorated a little bit better than the ones at the other facility. And the third thing was that the price was right, that the price was such that we would be able to afford bringing in some musical talent. So the committee was just delighted in finding this new facility, and we signed up for it immediately. But there was one little nagging doubt, one little nagging worry I had in the back of my mind that would not shut up. It was like a six-year-old on a long road trip. It was the portico of the Ridges. Now, as I mentioned before, the portico of Brasstown Valley was just really amazing. It was vaulted, had these huge beams. It was wonderful. The portico at the Ridges, they had one, they did, but for the life of me, it reminded me of the garage that was attached to my aunt's double-wide trailer in Macon, Georgia. She was proud of that double-wide, I'll tell you. It was rusty, dusty. It looked like a good wind could come along and flatten the whole facility like a crushed Coke can. So I was just worried to death that if we had our membership come and if that portico was the first thing that they saw, that they would get a bad impression of the retreat and, you know, we'd be getting off to a bad start. So for the whole 3 months from the time we signed the agreement until the retreat began, I obsessed about that portico. I was just convinced we had to do something. We had to decorate it. We somehow had to do something to take people's minds off that portico. And you know how things go when you're planning a big event. You know, as it gets closer to the day, there's just this rush of activities. There's a snowball, and you're just worried about if you forgot something. So the day before we were planning, the committee was planning to go up there, at 4 o'clock in the morning, I woke up with the horror that we had not planned how to decorate that portico. So the next morning, I called up Kim Brown, our executive director, and told her that we just had to go out to Garden Ridge and buy up their Christmas lights, their, you know, Easter decorations, and we had to be ready to go decorate the portico. So the next day, we haul our stuffs up, all our decorations, all our boxes, all our supplies for the retreat, and we go up to the ridges, and we're hauling the stuff in. We're at the reception desk. We're getting our room assignments, and I suddenly realized I didn't notice the portico on the way in. I hadn't paid any attention to it, and I rushed back outside. I was looking for my aunt's carport. But instead of my aunt's carport, there was this wonderful stacked stone and wood portico. They had changed it from the time we had signed the approval to come and the time of the retreat. I had been worrying about a problem that never was. And worse than that, I had been injecting fear into it. And that's where the real damage comes from. When you worry about a potential problem in the future and you inject fear in it, that's the damage. When you worry, you are actively bringing your problem into your life. The Bible says, "Lo, the thing I have feared the most is now upon me." Worry is the midwife to the birth of the problem. Worry is faith in the negative. Worry is a treatment. Now think about this. What is treatment? Treatment is when you take your word, you link it together with mental imagery, and you power it by emotions. You send a thing alive out into the universe to reflect back as your experience. That's what we teach as treatment. When you worry, you take your internal voice, which can rattle on for 24 hours a day and nobody notices it but you. You link it with your mental imagery, and you power it by an emotion, fear, which is one of the most powerful emotions you have, and you send a thing alive into the universe to reflect back as your experience. Worry is a treatment. Worry never robs tomorrow of its sorrow. It only saps today of its strength. Worry never solves a problem. Only a better idea can. Only a better idea can solve a problem. Now, I have a little story to illustrate this. I have a friend who I have known for over 25 years. She is really a very dear person. We're very best friends. She lives in D.C. I worked with her. Well, I still work with her. And I love her to death. She is a little neurotic. She really is. But that's okay, because the older I get, the more tolerant I am of neurotic people. I sometimes think if you're not neurotic, you're just not paying enough attention to what's going on. Anyway, poor Lynn has been obsessed from the very first day I met her about retiring and not having enough money when she retired. That has been just a major fear for her. To go into a fast food restaurant and see an elderly person standing behind the counter working at a McDonald's or a Burger King is as terrifying to Lynn as if Osama bin Laden would walk through those back doors for us. Now, like I said, this has been a fear for her all her working career. When she first got out of college, she got a job in radio. Now, radio is infamous for paying very poorly, and this job was way out in Montana or someplace. She had to move away from her family. And this was her first year working at this job. And so obsessed, so concerned was she about her retirement that even her first year, she was determined to put $2,000 in her IRA, the whole $2,000. and she figured up a budget of how she could do this. And there was a possibility that she could do it, but it meant that for an entire year, a solid year, she would have to eat generic frozen fish sticks for a year. And she did. She did. And she put the $2,000 away. Good. Well, now she's a woman in her early 50s, and she has been very successful. She owns almost practically outright her home in D.C., and even with things going on with home values, it's still a very good investment. I am sure she has easily got close to $1 million in investment. She probably has anywhere $300,000 to $400,000 cash on hand because she wants to, you know, be able to get to her money that quickly. Her mother, who's still alive, and Lynn is her only child, has a home that her father had designed. He was an engineer at the Department of Defense, and it sits facing a national park. So it is no doubt worth several $1 million. So all told, Lynn probably has at her disposal millions of dollars, well into the double digits. Now you would think, with all those resources, she would be living free of her fear. There's no logical reason for her to be concerned about her retirement. You would think she would be living free of fear. But she's not. She's not. Last summer, in the worst of the heat wave, and D.C. can get as hot as Atlanta can, trust me, she called me up, and she was complaining that she wasn't able to work that day. So I asked her, well, what's the problem? And she says, well, it's just too hot in my office. She works out of her home like I do. And I said, well, go turn up the air conditioner. Go turn the air conditioner up. And she's like, well, you see, the thermostat's on the first floor. I'm working here, up here on the third floor. I've got the thermostat turned to 78, so it's about 95 degrees up here where I'm trying to work. What's the problem? Why don't you have it? Well, Ken, you know, with the price of electricity these days, with the price of electricity, I'm trying to work in 95 degrees. You see, with all of that, with a couple of $1 million at her disposal, she is still eating frozen fish sticks. Still eating frozen fish sticks. And why? Why? Because you can't solve a problem of mind with material answers. It will never work. The problem started in consciousness, and so must the solution. It's the only place it can come from. Now, people can spend their entire lives living on frozen fish sticks. Whole groups of people do. In fact, countries do. In this country, we have created several industries based on selling fear and worry. The news media is one of them. And boy, howdy, are they having a heyday with us for the past couple of months. If you don't believe that the news media's profit is from fear and dread, just for the next couple of days, pay attention to the news media. Pay attention to the advertisers. Who's making money from the news? It's insurance companies that want you fearful of what the future holds for you, or pharmaceutical companies that tell you that they've got a pill that can make you cope better with the present. This kind of fear-based information can only produce ulcers. It can never produce wise decisions. We've turned our national life into a soap opera. A soap opera. And much of the calamities that the media predicts that's waiting for us are wrong. Now, just a couple of years ago, do you remember that there was a thing that they were obsessed about? It was the bird flu. The bird flu. They just had us convinced that somewhere in a chicken coop in South Vietnam, the bird flu was going to percolate up, Delta was going to bring it right to our front door. Oh, our little chickens were worried to death. They really were. Now, here's the thing about the bird flu. We were all focused on it, and that's fine. I'm glad we've got our scientists working on it. That's a good thing. But they were injecting fear into it, sensationalizing it. Why? Because they want to keep you tuned in. They want to keep you turning back. And here's the problem with that. While that was going on, while we were just, you know, in a hissy about the bird flu, there was a little hanky-panky going on in our mortgage industry that not enough of us were paying attention to, and that thing has developed and almost brought this nation to its knees. Now, by all means, keep yourself well-informed. Do. Keep yourself well-informed. You have an obligation to know what's going on. But it should not be a 24-hour endeavor. You don't have to become an expert on every situation. Some people act as if any moment now the cell phone's going to ring and there's going to be Barack Obama wanting to know what they should do about the financial crisis. Or John McCain interested in, you know, global warming. It's not going to happen. You don't need to invest that much of your energy into what's going on, particularly if it goes over to a place of worry and fear. Anticipating future problems will rob you of the joy of the day. Harry Truman said that for every 3 problems you see coming down the path towards you, 2 of them will run into the ditch long before they get to you. Kennedy Schultz said, "Our lives are miracles unfolding, not problems to be solved." Miracles unfolding, not problems to be solved. When you're worrying, you're trying to solve all your problems, and you can't because you're not able to. You're going to have problems in life. The only time you're going to have a problem-free life is when there's a flat line on your EKG. Oh, it's only water. I'm so disappointed. Work on what you have in front of your hands today. What you have in front of your hands today, that's what you need to work on. Leave tomorrow's problems for tomorrow. Create a place in your life that I would call a worry-free zone, a place where you just absolutely refuse to worry. Now, I do this in the bedroom, in my bed. When I'm at sleep during the night, and the occasional get those 4 o'clock worries, you know, wake up, I refuse to indulge in them. I will just tell them, wait a minute, this is not the place for you. You go away. I need my rest. You need to do that because it doesn't make any sense to toss and turn worrying about something. You're losing your sleep. You're draining your energy. So even the next morning when you wake up, you're not going to have the wherewithal to face the problem you're trying to deal with. Now, I have a solution or suggestion for you on what you can do. Now, the first thing, when you catch yourself worrying, when you find yourself worrying, do not berate yourself. Don't beat yourself up. Don't say, oh, here I go again. I'm worrying. I'll never catch on with this teaching. No, that's not the thing to do. When you catch yourself worrying, congratulate yourself. Congratulate yourself. You're on the way to healing your life. Before, you would have just let the worrying go full steam. Now you know to stop it. And now you know to take a breath and get a better idea about yourself. You're healing your consciousness. So when you catch yourself, don't berate yourself and think that you're doing something wrong. No, you're actually healing your life. Now, when I'm in that place of worry and I need a better idea, here's something that I do, and I'll give it to you as my suggestion. It's something I call my mental rosary. Now, don't worry. It's not with beads and strings or anything. What I start doing is I start going through the people in my life, the people I like, the people that I don't particularly care that much for, the people I just deal with on a daily basis, the cashier and that sort of thing, anybody who comes up to my consciousness. And I start thinking, you know, what would be the best that could happen for them? What could be the greatest gift that the universe could supply for them right now in their life? You start doing that. And I guarantee you, within just two or three of those people, you will be back to sleep. And even if the alarm clock goes off and you're still doing it, your body will be refreshed. Your mind will be more at ease. It won't have gone through those hours of turmoil, and you'll wake up with more energy to solve the problems you're dealing with. When you take your attention off of your worries and place them on your impulse for love, you open a channel of God possibilities in your life. There is a law of compensation. As you turn towards Spirit, your ability to see more avenues for Spirit coming into your life increases, and it allows you to then become an outlet for the illumination from which you were created. You are a divine expression of God in the physical plane. You're here to witness God's support for your dreams and desires. And you do this by freeing yourself from worry. Holmes wrote, "We need not worry how things are going to come out. The law takes care of everything and returns to each exactly its due." Now this morning, what do you think is your due? What do you really think you deserve from your Creator? Is it the love and abundance that your soul cries out for? The love, the joy, the laughter, the play, the dance, the music, the friends, the lovers, the home, the work that's fulfilling, the bank account that's overflowing, the fabulous trips, the meeting the wonderful people? Is that what you believe that your loving Creator is desiring for you? I do. Or on the other hand, do you think you're just some knucklehead in need of a good hard lesson? You have never been in need of a good hard lesson, and the only one that's ever been imposed upon you has been the one that you've imposed upon yourself. Do you think God would have given you desires and not created a way for them to manifest in your life? How could a loving God be interested in experiencing your dreams and desires crushed like bugs in the dust? It doesn't make sense. Kennedy noted that early on in our development, that we will turn loose, give up the idea of a loving and supportive and encouraging God. We let go of that, particularly for ourselves, very early on. But we will hang on like the devil to the grave for an angry and punishing God. That one we won't turn loose of. Why? God has never been angry with anyone. Never. God knows nothing of anger. It only knows of life and love. Life and love. You are 100% God stuff in the physical plane. 100%. The essence of your desires is love. That's what you're really here finding. The only thing that can keep love and law from manifesting your good in your life is your refusal to believe you're worthy. That's the only thing that can keep it from happening. Right now, declare you are worthy of God's love. Right now. I'm not going to let you go to brunch until you do. You are worthy of God's love. From this point on, make a commitment to yourself. You will never speak ill of yourself again. You will fire that prosecutor in your head who has been seeking a life term for you for the simple mistakes you've made for being a human. You're the only one that has been interested in your mistakes. God has never been, and it's time to set those burdens down. You're doing the best you can, and being here today is your declaration to the universe that you're open and receptive to greater ideas of living of every kind. Fall in love with your possibilities. Fall in love with them. Speak your dreams to a universe, for it has been in love with them ever since you breathed the first breath of Earth's air. The best in your life is yet to be, and when you free yourself from worrying, you will speed the best along its way to you. This is the good news, and so it is. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, let's put these good ideas to work, and let's do it with a mental spiritual mind treatment. So come together in consciousness with me and know this truth with me. There's one God, one mind, one creative power, and I've been created from this power plus nothing else. And I'm here in the physical plane to experience all the love and all the joy and all the wonder of God. I'm here to witness God's support for my love and dreams. I'm here to have great work, great health, wonderful friends, abundant community. I'm here to see the wonders of the world. I'm here to meet fascinating people. And I do this with ease. I do this with joy. I do this with knowing that God supports me, that the universe, that right thinking flows through me, manifesting these good things, manifesting these right people, that they come to me easily and effortlessly, that it's not with stress and strain, and it's most certainly not through worry. Right here, right now, I make a commitment to myself. I will not think small anymore. I will speak my truth to the universe. I will declare myself an outlet for the love and support of God's energy in my life. And I will witness for myself the wonderful things that God has to offer, the wonderful thing that my soul aches for. And as I do, I know that all these wonderful things cry out to the universe, I'm here, and I am ready to experience all the love and all the joy and all the abundance God has to offer. This is a great right knowing. These words and these mental imagery have become a thing alive with the Spirit of God. They go forth from here and reflect back perfectly as my experience. They can do nothing else, for it's the way God set the universe in motion, and it must work in my life. This is my truth. I celebrate it. I rejoice in it. I release it. It does its good and perfect work and returns to me multiplied abundantly, and so it is.